Chapter 52. The dance, Arthur had chosen the entrance hall for the ballroom. Very wisely, for no other room could have been so airy, or would have had the advantage of the wide doors opening into the garden, as well as a ready entrance into the other rooms. To be sure, a stone floor was not the pleasantest to dance on, but then, most of the dancers had known what it was to enjoy a Christmas dance on kitchen quarries. It was one of those entrance halls which make the surrounding rooms look like closets with stucco angels, trumpets, and flower wreaths on the lofty ceiling, and great medallions of miscellaneous heroes on the walls, alternating with statues in niches. Just the sort of place to be ornamented well with green boughs, and Mr. Craig had been proud to show his taste and his hothouse plants on the occasion. The broad steps of the stone staircase were covered with cushions to serve as seats for the children, who were to stay till 9:30 with the servant maids to see the dancing, and as this dance was confined to the chief tenants, there was abundant room for everyone. The lights were charmingly disposed in colored paper lamps, high up among green boughs, and the farmers' wives and daughters, as they peeped in, believed no scene could be more splendid. They knew now quite well in what sort of rooms the king and queen lived, and their thoughts glanced with some pity towards cousins and acquaintances who had not this fine opportunity of knowing how things went on in the great world. The lamps were already lit, though the sun had not long set, and there was that calm light out of doors in which we seem to see all objects more distinctly than in the broad day. It was a pretty scene outside the house. The farmers and their families were moving about the lawn, among the flowers and shrubs, or along the broad straight road leading from the east front, where a carpet of mossy grass spread on each side, studded here and there with a dark flat-boughed cedar, or a grand pyramidal fir sweeping the ground with its branches, all tipped with a fringe of paler green. The groups of cottagers in the park were gradually diminishing, the young ones being attracted towards the lights that were beginning to gleam from the windows of the gallery in the abbey, which was to be their dancing room, and some of the sober elder ones thinking it time to go home quietly. One of these was Lisbeth Bede, and Seth went with her, not from filial attention only, for his conscience would not let him join in dancing. It had been rather a melancholy day to Seth. Dinah had never been more constantly present with him than in this scene, where everything was so unlike her. He saw her all the more vividly, after looking at the thoughtless faces and gay-colored dresses of the young women, just as one feels the beauty and the greatness of a pictured Madonna the more when it has been for a moment screened from us by a vulgar head in a bonnet. But this presence of Dinah in his mind only helped him to bear the better with his mother's mood, which had been becoming more and more querulous for the last hour. Poor Lisbeth was suffering from a strange conflict of feelings. Her joy and pride in the honor paid to her darling son Adam was beginning to be worsted in the conflict with the jealousy and fretfulness which had revived, when Adam came to tell her that Captain Donathan desired him to join the dancers in the hall. Adam was getting more and more out of her reach. She wished all the old troubles back again, for then it mattered more to Adam what his mother said and did. "Eh, it's fine talking o' dancing," she said, "and thy father not a 5 weekends grave. And I wish I were there too, istid o' being left to take up merrier folks' room above ground." "Nay, don't look at it I that way, mother," said Adam, who was determined to be gentle to her today. "Don't mean to dance, I shall only look on. And since the captain wishes me to be there, it 'ud look as if I thought I knew better than him to say as I'd rather not stay. And he knows how he's behaved to me today. Eh, thee do as thee list, for thy old mother's got no right to hinder thee. She's not but th old husk, and thee's slipped away from her, like the ripe nut." "Well, mother," said Adam, "I'll go and tell the captain as it hurts thy feelings for me to stay, and I'd rather go home you po that account. He won't take it ill then, I dare say, and I'm willing." He said this with some effort, for he really longed to be near Hetty this evening. Nay, nay, I wanna how do, that the young squire'll be angered. Go and do what he ordered to do, and me and Seth'll go home. I know it's a great honor for thee to be so looked on, and who's to be prouder on it nor thy mother? Hadna she the cumber o'er yearn thee, and doin' for thee all these years? Well, goodbye then, mother, goodbye, lad, remember Jip when you get home, said Adam, turning away towards the gate of the pleasure grounds, where he hoped he might be able to join the Poysers, for he had been so occupied throughout the afternoon, that he had had no time to speak to Eddie. His eye soon detected a distant group, which he knew to be the right one, returning to the house along the broad gravel road, and he hastened on to meet them. Why, Adam, I'm glad to get sight on you again, said Mr. Poyser, who was carrying Toddy on his arm. We're going to have a bit o' fun, I hope, now your work's all done. And here's Eddie has promised no end o' partners, and I've just been asking her if she'd agreed to dance why you, and she says no. Well, I didn't think o' dancing tonight, said Adam, already tempted to change his mind, as he looked at Eddie. Nonsense, said Mr. Poyser. Hi, everybody's going to dance tonight, all but T.H. Old Squire and Mrs. Irwin. Mrs. Best's been telling us as Miss Liddy and Miss Irwin'll dance, and the young squire'll pick my wife for his first partner, T. Open the ball. So she'll be forced to dance, though she's laid by ever since the Christmas afore the little un was born. You canna for shame stand still, Adam, and you a fine young fellow, and can dance as well as anybody. Nay, nay, said Mrs. Poyser, it 'ud be unbecoming. I know the dancin's nonsense, but if you stick at everything because it's nonsense, you wanna go far I this life. When your broth's ready made for you, you mun swallow the thickenin', or else let the broth alone. Then if Eddie'll dance with me, said Adam, yielding either to Mrs. Poyser's argument, or to something else, I'll dance whichever dance she's free. I've got no partner for the fourth dance, said Eddie, I'll dance that with you, if you like. Ah, said Mr. Poyser, but you mun dance the first dance, Adam, else it'll look particular. There's plenty o' nice partners to pick and choose from, and it's hard for the gels when the men stand by and don't ask 'em. Adam felt the justice of Mr. Poyser's observation. It would not do for him to dance with no one besides Eddie, and remembering that Jonathan Birch had some reason to feel hurt today, he resolved to ask Miss Mary to dance with him the first dance, if as he had no other partner. There's the big clock striking 8, said Mr. Poyser. We must make haste in now, else the squire and the ladies 'll be in afore us, and that won't look well. When they had entered the hall, and the three children under Molly's charge had been seated on the stairs, the folding doors of the drawing room were thrown open, and Arthur entered in his regimentals, leading Mrs. Irwin to a carpet-covered dais ornamented with hothouse plants, where she and Miss Anne were to be seated with old Mr. Donathan, that they might look on at the dancing, like the kings and queens in the plays. Arthur had put on his uniform to please the tenants, he said, who thought as much of his militia dignity as if it had been an elevation to the premiership. He had not the least objection to gratify them in that way. His uniform was very advantageous to his figure. The old squire, before sitting down, walked round the hall to greet the tenants and make polite speeches to the wives. He was always polite. But the farmers had found out, after long puzzling, that this polish was one of the signs of hardness. It was observed that he gave his most elaborate civility to Mrs. Poyser tonight, inquiring particularly about her health, recommending her to strengthen herself with cold water as he did, and avoid all drugs. Mrs. Poyser curtsied and thanked him with great self-command. But when he had passed on, she whispered to her husband, I'll lay my life he's brewing some nasty turn against us. Old Harry D's no wag his tail so for nothing. Mr. Poyser had no time to answer, for now Arthur came up and said, Mrs. Poyser, I'm come to request the favor of your hand for the first dance. And, Mr. Poyser, you must let me take you to my aunt, for she claims you as her partner. The wife's pale cheek flushed with a nervous sense of unwonted honor as Arthur led her to the top of the room. But Mr. Poyser, to whom an extra glass had restored his youthful confidence in his good looks and good dancing, walked along with them quite proudly, secretly flattering himself that Miss Lydia had never had a partner in her life who could lift her off the ground as he would. In order to balance the honors given to the two parishes, Miss Irwin danced with Luke Britton, the largest Broxton farmer, and Mr. Goyne led out Mrs. Britton. Mr. Irwin, after seating his sister Anne, had gone to the Abbey Gallery, as he had agreed with Arthur beforehand, to see how the merriment of the cottagers was prospering. Meanwhile, all the less distinguished couples had taken their places. Hetty was led out by the inevitable Mr. Craig, and Mary Birch by Adam, and now the music struck up, and the glorious country dance, best of all dances, began. Pity it was not a boarded floor. Then the rhythmic stamping of the thick shoes would have been better than any drums. That merry stamping, that gracious nodding of the head, that waving bestowal of the hand, where can we see them now? That simple dancing of well-covered matrons, laying aside for an hour the cares of house and dairy, remembering but not affecting youth, not jealous but proud of the young maidens by their side, that holiday sprightliness of portly husbands paying little compliments to their wives, as if their courting days were come again, those lads and lasses a little confused and awkward with their partners, having nothing to say, it would be a pleasant variety to see all that sometimes, instead of low dresses and large skirts, and scanning glances exploring costumes, and languid men in lacquered boots smiling with double meaning. There was but one thing to mar Martin Poyser's pleasure in this dance. It was that he was always in close contact with Luke Britton, that slovenly farmer. He thought of throwing a little glazed coldness into his eye in the crossing of hands. But then, as Miss Irwin was opposite to him instead of the offensive Luke, he might freeze the wrong person. So he gave his face up to hilarity, unchilled by moral judgments. How Hetty's heart beat as Arthur approached her. He had hardly looked at her today. Now he must take her hand. Would he press it? Would he look at her? She thought she would cry if he gave her no sign of feeling. Now he was there, he had taken her hand, yes, he was pressing it. Hetty turned pale as she looked up at him for an instant and met his eyes, before the dance carried him away. That pale look came upon Arthur like the beginning of a dull pain, which clung to him, though he must dance, and smile and joke all the same. Hetty would look so, when he told her what he had to tell her, and he should never be able to bear it, he should be a fool, and give way again. Hetty's look did not really mean so much as he thought. It was only the sign of a struggle between the desire for him to notice her, and the dread lest she should betray the desire to others. But Hetty's face had a language that transcended her feelings. There are faces which nature charges with a meaning and pathos not belonging to the single human soul that flutters beneath them, but speaking the joys and sorrows of foregone generations, eyes that tell of deep love which doubtless has been and is somewhere, but not paired with these eyes, perhaps paired with pale eyes, that can say nothing, just as a national language may be instinct with poetry unfelt by the lips that use it. That look of Hetty's oppressed Arthur with a dread which yet had something of a terrible unconfessed delight in it, that she loved him too well. There was a hard task before him, for at that moment he felt he would have given up 3 years of his youth for the happiness of abandoning himself without remorse to his passion for Hetty. These were the incongruous thoughts in his mind as he led Mrs. Poyser, who was panting with fatigue, and secretly resolving that neither judge nor jury should force her to dance another dance, to take a quiet rest in the dining room, where supper was laid out for the guests, to come and take it as they chose. "I've desired Hetty to remember as she's got to dance why you, sir," said the good innocent woman, "for she's so thoughtless, she'd be like enough to go and engage herself for ivory dance. So I told her not to promise too many." "Thank you, Mrs. Poyser," said Arthur, not without a twinge. Now, sit down in this comfortable chair, and here is Mills ready to give you what you would like best. He hurried away to seek another matronly partner, for due honor must be paid to the married women, before he asked any of the young ones. And the country dances, and the stamping, and the gracious nodding, and the waving of the hands, went on joyously. At last the time had come for the fourth dance longed for by the strong, grave Adam, as if he had been a delicate handed youth of 18. For we are all very much alike, when we are in our first love, and Adam had hardly ever touched Hetty's hand for more than a transient greeting, had never danced with her but once before. His eyes had followed her eagerly tonight in spite of himself, and had taken in deeper draughts of love. He thought she behaved so prettily, so quietly. She did not seem to be flirting at all. She smiled less than usual. There was almost a sweet sadness about her. "Ah, bless her," he said inwardly. "I'd make her life a happy un, if a strong arm to work for her, and a heart to love her, could do it." And then there stole over him delicious thoughts of coming home from work, and drawing Hetty to his side, and feeling her cheek softly pressed against his, till he forgot where he was, and the music and the tread of feet might have been the falling of rain, and the roaring of the wind, for what he knew. But now the third dance was ended, and he might go up to her, and claim her hand. She was at the far end of the hall near the staircase, whispering with Molly, who had just given the sleeping Toddy into her arms, before running to fetch shawls and bonnets from the landing. Mrs. Poyser had taken the two boys away into the dining room to give them some cake, before they went home in the cart with Grandfather, and Molly was to follow as fast as possible. "Let me hold her," said Adam, as Molly turned upstairs. "The children are so heavy when they're asleep." Hetty was glad of the relief, for to hold Toddy in her arms, standing, was not at all a pleasant variety to her. But this second transfer had the unfortunate effect of rousing Toddy, who was not behind any child of her age in peevishness at an unseasonable awaking. While Hetty was in the act of placing her in Adam's arms, and had not yet withdrawn her own, Toddy opened her eyes, and forthwith fought out with her left fist at Adam's arm, and with her right caught at the string of brown beads round Hetty's neck. The locket leaped out from her frock, and the next moment the string was broken, and Hetty, helpless, saw beads and locket scattered wide on the floor. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.